You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
But a huge welcome to the stage today for Harry Baker!
Hello everybody, how are we doing Greenbelt? Fantastic, thank you so much for being here. I had two sort of main fears about this session. The first fear was that no one would be here because everyone was watching Jeremy Corbyn. And the second was that as soon as I mentioned that, people would go, oh, wait, is he on now? And would get up and leave. So it's too late. You're here for the long run now. You've made the right decision. Thank you for being here. This has been an experiment, but this is the third time doing it now. And I think it works. And I'm so excited about it. I started a podcast during lockdown. I think I was the only person who did that. And all it was a chance to share poetry with other people. I think that's something I've always loved doing and something I never took for granted, but I also never expected that it wouldn't be possible for a few years. And so all it was me on Instagram Live with one other poet sort of sharing poems with each other. And then sort of instead of sort of warmth and applause, we were just sort of clinging on to clap emojis with our dear lives. And that has since become something that I've done live. And this feels almost like a kind of perfect merger of that, where we've been able to get guests from all over, both online and in person. So thank you so much for joining us. The format is going to be, we're going to take it in turns to share something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. And we're going to have a bit of a chat in between. I'm so excited to introduce our guest to you as well. But I thought I would start off with something old. And because there's a sort of undertone of wedding theme there as well, this is extra relevant because this is a love poem, and it is a poem I wrote for my wife. And when I first started writing, I thought love had to be this sort of massive epic thing that comes along, sweeps everything out of its path. And then I realized I was thinking of a dinosaur. And it is that. I love that side of it, but it's the more sort of consistent everyday nature of it that I've come to appreciate. So this is trying to celebrate some of that, and it's simply called Dust. It's not the flowers, it's the weeding in the mud with you. It's not the champagne, it's that carpet in that favourite mug you use. It's not the chocolate. Okay, yes it is, but not just one or two. It is becoming Bruce Bogtrotter and Augustus Gloop. It's voting frozen pizza over fancy grub with you. Because some nights I think I beat a slice of comfort food. Something, anything I eat will include some for you. Because you're not hungry, but you might just have a couple spoons. It's not the dreaming, it's the waking up with you. I want to be here long enough to gather dust with you. It's us agreeing that romantic baths need bubbles too. Yet now I see maybe the snorkel was too much for you. And yes, the submarine and rubber duck came out a touch too soon, and yet the fundamental truth is I have fun with you. It's watching crappy films because that's what you want to do. Then on the nights you're gone, finding I want to watch them too. It's knowing if it came to it, I had option to. I would not change a single thing of what I've got with you. It's not the dreaming, it's the waking up with you. I want to be here long enough to gather dust with you. For us, love isn't in the air. That is just where we found it. Or this is built upon what we have done to ground it. It's not the spark when we first met. It is the lifetime built around it. It's by small amounts that mount amounts and mountains. I need not justify, adjust or fear I'm judged by you. Such is the glorious consistency of loving you. My heart's not skipped a beat. It just constantly thuds for you. Such is the everyday magnificence of loving you. It's not something we fell into so much as stumbled through. It's the spectacular normality of loving you. It's not the dreaming, it's the waking up with you. I want to be here long enough to gather dust. Thank you. Thank you so much. Can you give me a cheer if you've come to either of the other Worldwide Woken Spurred sessions we've had here? Fantastic. Thank you for coming back. I'm so excited for this one. The poet I'm about to bring to you, I have followed online for a while and got to see it in person this year for the first time, and they were absolutely brilliant. And it was at Solas Festival, which is sort of a kind of Scottish Greenbelt is how I see it in my head. I don't know if that's fair to either, but I was so excited when they agreed to come and speak to us and share their poetry with us. So can you please make a massive cheer, welcome, all the round of applause that you can muster as we welcome to the stage and the screen the fantastic Len Penny.
Hello.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us, Len. I've got so much I want to ask you, but I wondered if you'd be up for starting off with a poem and then we'll go into...
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
So is this my something old, yeah?
Yes, please.
I thought I would start with the first piece that I ever put online, because it's really what kind of started this journey for me. And I was hesitant to choose it for my something old because it's about my mum and I didn't want to imply or outright state that my mother was old. She's not, and I'm also very careful of how I speak about this because I will say things like, I just felt her spirit with me, and you know, she was sitting with me in my heart, and she'll be in the front row going, stop saying that, it sounds like I'm dead and I'm not. So this is for my very still with us mother. This is I'm no having children, and it's very terribly named because people assume it means I'm not going to have children, which admittedly is on me. I'll start off with I'm no having children. I'm no having children. I'm going to hae weans, and you can ask what I cry them, no what are their names. They'll be getting a piece, no a wee packed lunch. They'll be haeing a scran, no having a munch, and they'll fanny about. They will only waste time. When they scrieve their wee poems, I'll make sure they rhyme. I'm no having children. I'm going to hae weans. They'll be gouping and bealing when they've got aches and pains. And instead of don't worry, I'll say dinna fash. Instead of stand your ground, dinna take ony snash. My wains will be crabbit, no in a bad mood. And they'll grieve, no cry, when their day is no good. I'm no having children. I'm going to hear wains with a prude ancient language crammed in their wee brains. And whenever life tells them their English is bad, I'll tell them the hassles that their mammy had. And I'll say my ma's words to the day that I'm dead. Ach, be all right, hen. You've a good Scots tongue in your head. Thank you.
Incredible. Thank you so much. You said that was the first one you shared online.
Yeah.
When was that? And what was the decision to put it online? Had you been writing for a long time before that? How
no,
did that kind of change things?
That was about the second or third piece that I wrote. I started writing in 2020 after I had left an abusive relationship and I needed something to do. My therapist had said, you know, get a hobby, gal. You can't just stay in bed all day doing nothing. So I started cross-stitching, which very, very quickly led to both, you know, huge expensive bill because it's very expensive. Anyone who cross-stitches will tell you that. Huge time commitment, not portable at all. You're just trailing threads everywhere. And also I was getting like carpal tunnel. Because I was like, I can cross-stitch myself mentally well. That's a thing I can do. And so abandoned that, left that in the dust, and thought, what's quick, cheap, portable, you know, it's not going to cripple my hands. I started writing poetry. So I wrote the first piece in the collection, Honey, which I chose not to do because it's incredibly dark and it bums everyone out. And I feel like the vibes are good. I don't want to ruin the vibes. But I showed it to my mum and she went, oh, hen, that's lovely, but it's awfully sad, isn't it? You know, not anything happier. So I'm not having children, and that's my attempt at happiness.
Amazing. And I feel like Matt's maybe we should just rebrand poetry as being sort of cheap and portable because that's sort of, you know, or just easier than cross stitch, and that maybe like get more people into it.
That's it. It's much more accessible than cross stitch. That was wildly out of my league.
And how did that fit alongside the Scots Word of the Day? Because was that around a similar time that you were sharing those?
It was, yes. Yeah. So I think we've just passed about 5 years of the Scots Word of the Day. And I was like, this is going to last for like 2 weeks. Like, I'm very not good at sticking to anything, you know, cross stitch. If I miss a day, if there's not a Scots Word of the Day posted, come looking for me. Like, that something has gone terribly wrong. I've been in hospital and posted the Scots Word of the Day. I've done international travel in the Scots Word of the Day. I've done it from like a car. There's not a single... And the thing is, it's not even like prioritising it properly. Like, I'll be like, we can't eat dinner. I haven't done the Scots Word of the Day. And it's like burning on the hob and everyone's like, you need to come. Like, no, Scots Word of the Day. That takes precedence.
What's the latest in the day you've ever done it?
So there was one time when I was at an event and I hadn't got back in at 11:50 and my partner had recorded. He knew I wouldn't be back till late, so he'd recorded like an interim Scots Word of the Day just in case it got to like 11:59. Thing is, he's English as I'll get out. But I mean, he's like, I don't hold it against him, but he's very much not. He's not. That's not the voice that you tune in the Scots Word of the Day for. So it's very like Scots Word of the Day today is, and I was like, that's true love, is being willing to absolutely, you know, get an absolute roasting off my audience.
Incredible. And have you ever repeated a word or been tempted to repeat it? How far in advance do you choose the words, I guess?
I think I've done fanny balls a couple of times. But the thing is, I don't intentionally repeat it, but people will be like fastidious. They think I have like a spreadsheet. I don't. It's done on vibes. People are like, actually, did that word on October 4th, 2023. And I could not give that much pressure to myself. I love that for you. Me, I will just be working off of vibes, because sometimes you need to consolidate the learning.
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes I just completely forgot. And I don't think you can have enough fanny balls in your life. You know what I mean? I feel like that's a lesson that bears repeating, you know?
Incredible. And how has it been for you going from putting your poems online to publish them in a book to kind of touring around with it? What is it like performing on stage versus sharing things online? Because I think I started off and it felt very safe doing things in person because I could see who was in the room and I could try and sort of control it as much as possible. Whereas putting things online, you sort of never know how far it's going to go or who's going to respond or how they're going to respond. And that's been an exercise for me in essentially giving up that level of control. But to have sort of shared stuff online, there is an element of control in terms of how you're presenting it and what you're sharing. Has the response to it, I guess, online been surprising to you in any way? And then how does that compare to doing events in person and meeting people and hearing the impact your work has?
In a word, I find public performance heinous. I think it's actually the most, because I'm so anxious. Like, I have no idea how many people are watching me right now, and that's fine. You put me in a room with five people, no. I'm terrified. I have to perform sitting down because you can't see my legs shake if I'm sitting down. You know, I started wearing long skirts so you can see the trembling. I think people assume that just because I can do it, that it's not difficult. People don't understand the kind of how important it is when people pay you to do things that you find really difficult. So I definitely am not a natural performer. I think if I'd had to do it like you and run the gamut of, you know, open mic night, community, you know, poetry events, stuff like that, I just wouldn't have done it. I think only because I was able to do it virtually. Because when I started, everything was locked down.
Yeah.
You know, in person. That's the only way I was able to sort of hone my craft, as it were, because I just sell. You know, I've got tonight my Edinburgh Book Festival event, and I'm so anxious, like, because there's so many people. And the thing is, what are they going to do if I mess up? Like, I always tell kids when I do my workshop and skills, like, what are they going to do? You know, be bad. And then I take my own advice because I'm shaking there, like, as if they're going to follow me out the room with, like, pitchforks if I flub my lines. So I'm very much not a natural poet. I'm not a natural performer, which is why I think I approach everything I do with gratitude, because I didn't set out to do this. So everything that happens, you know, all the great experiences and opportunities I've had, I'm just like, this is the best thing that's ever happened at the end of the day, and I just want to make sure I do a good job.
And at what point did you decide to do a collection of your poems, and how did you decide what poems went into that and when to start it and when to stop it?
So I was very reluctant to put it in a book. For me, it felt like crafting the poem in amber. I mean, I very much feel like a performance poet, so I was only writing stuff down to have originally to then perform from. So some of the pieces in the new collection that I'm releasing now, I had to actually go back and transcribe the videos because I hadn't written them down at the time. I was so terrified, because for me, writing poetry is a method of control. You know, I mean, it was taking these ideas and distilling them and condensing them on the page. It felt like a kind of thing. So when it came to putting them on the page, I thought, it's trapping them in amber, it's open to interpretation by an audience who isn't me, and I'm not there to micromanage that. That was inconceivable, and it wasn't until a couple of classes studying one of my pieces, and I was so nosy. I was like, going to send many essays, and I want to read what these kids are writing. And then I realised that, you know, me not being there and telling them what to think was actually allowing them to engage with my work in a whole new way. So it felt like a joyful experience, and not the kind of horrific, you know, soul-bearing, vulnerable experience I thought it would be. I thought it actually turned out okay. And then, you know, were these poems, and everyone responded well, so they were like, write a second book, please.
The thing that I did during lockdown was, again, because you couldn't gather in these spaces and perform, I did an art exhibition with my brother. So he's a graphic designer. He designed sort of first three of my books. And so it was kind of influenced by the words, but also kind of his sort of mathematical way of doing things as well. And some of it, to me, like the ideas behind it felt really interesting and quite sort of high concept almost. So I was so keen to just have like massive explainers next to each one saying, like, just so you know, this is all of the thought that's gone into this. This is why we did it in this way. This is why I think it's interesting, because it felt so important to me that people get it and that people have like the best possible opportunity to understand the work and therefore kind of get the most out of it. Whereas my brother was just like, oh no, we don't need to put anything up. People can just sort of look at it and decide if they like it. And again, that felt so alien to me in terms of this sense of, because I know what I mean when I'm writing and when I'm sharing it, I want people to get that as well. However, there's people who have found stuff in my work that I never intended to be there. And similarly, there's people who absolutely get it or get enough from it without you explaining it that you realise you're only half of the exchange, I guess. You're putting stuff out there and then it's up to people how they kind of interpret it.
That's it. I think a lot of poets are also not selfish. Selfish is the wrong word. But they think a lot about themselves when they write. Yeah. And as you say, it's a conversation. You say things, the audience responds, and you get something from that as well. What is it, that concept to say, the death of the author, where there was like a debate on Twitter at one point about one of my poems went, and people were like, oh, well, the death of the author would indicate, I'm no dead. I like waded in. I was like, I am here. This is what it means. But I didn't realise at that point that I am dead, poetically speaking, which I hate.
Poetry was seeing people share their own work because I felt some kind of connection to them. Again, whether that was in person or online, because previously my only introduction was people who had been there for hundreds of years, and so I had no idea what they were thinking. I couldn't ask them. And to one extent, that's fine, that doesn't matter. But I think the idea of seeing someone and seeing them put themselves into their work is then enough of a way into that anyway as well.
Yeah, I didn't connect with poetry at all at school. I thought I was the kind of the only idiot in the room that didn't understand. And then I started speaking to people and I was like, hang on, we're all not getting this. I don't think we're the problem. And it was like unionizing them, being like, guys, if we all tell the teacher we don't understand, things are going to change. But I always felt like poetry just wasn't for me, and I couldn't see a way into it for me, because, you know, when it's got speaker, being someone who very much, I like rhyme, everything I do rhymes, it's all in rhyming cup. Some people hate that. I've got so many reviews that are like, I did not realise this would all rhyme, which I feel so sorry for them, because if you hate rhyme, that's the wrong book to pick up. You know what I mean? I was like picking up a cookbook and going, not a massive fan of ingredients. Like, that's, I feel the vibes are pretty cursed if you don't like rhyme. But I do, because, I mean, I come from a poetic tradition that's very, very much based on rhyme. I mean, I got my kind of formal training in poetry from Robert Burns competition, which is such a good way to make friends. Oh, everybody loves you. Everybody loves that kid in class who's like really, really obsessed with Burns competitions. Really didn't have a kind of detrimental impact on my ability to socialise. But I got my training with Robert Burns, with the couplets and the stylistic stuff and the traditional Scots verse, and that was what I wanted to combine with what I was seeing on slam stages, with like you know, taboo pushing topics and like bleeding on the stage and actually making it like a like an acting performance. It felt like, you know, real works of dramaturgy. So I wanted to combine the two, but for me, rhyme, you know, I will sacrifice Scots language to the altar of rhyme every single time. Because people come to me and they're like, oh, that doesn't rhyme with the proper Scots word. And I'm like, I know, but it rhymes with the English word. So just cut me some slack, gal. Like, you know?
Incredible. I think that's such a thing, though, in terms of feeling like the only person who doesn't get it and being able to, being open about that and say that, because again, I got into writing through loving music and lyrics. So again, everything rhymed. Everything was so structured and playful and fun. And then because I was calling myself a poet, I was then, people assumed that I knew loads about other poets and I just had no idea. And my wife has such a great quality in that she goes out of her way to always ask like the most obvious questions, because she knows there'll be other people as well who are thinking them, and not worrying about making yourself look stupid or, you know, how it might look. And my favourite example of this was in Margate, in our like local bar, they had a sort of like craft beer tasting night. And so, you know, you paid like a tenner or whatever and you got to try loads of different beers. And it was basically like a cheap way of getting drinks. But there were also people there who were real sort of aficionados. And so they were kind of like talking about all of the process and this kind of thing. And then about half an hour in, my wife just sort of put her hand up and said, I'm sorry, you keep going on about it, but what are hops? And you could feel half of the room roll their eyes. And you could feel the other half of the room breathe a sigh of relief, because none of us had any idea either, but no one wanted to feel like they were asking the wrong question. So I think that idea of like unionizing everyone who's felt left out by it is such an open and a generous thing to do as well. And I think it almost feels like some country exists by feeling other or by feeling like you have to be super clever to get it. And therefore they kind of suggest that the opposite is true, that if you write something that people connect to easily, then that's not poetry, even though that obviously is.
I think sometimes we relegate poetry to kind of, I want to say professionally exclusive and informally wanky. Like we keep them on this shelf, and if it's not meant to be understood, it's meant to be, you're meant to put work in to enjoy it. And at school, we sort of have a concept list and you pick at the bones of someone else's creativity. So for me, I felt like I didn't want to do that. I mean, all the poets that I was studying at uni, first of all, it was in Spanish, so right over my head. And second of all, like, it just felt like I wasn't, if I put the work in, I wasn't going to relate to them anyway, because it was all about, you know, either incredibly misogynistic love, or, you know, this sort of political context that didn't matter to me, wasn't relevant to me. So it wasn't until I was doing my dissertation on a Spanish poet called Ramón San Pedro, who was campaigning for the right to die, and he was quadriplegic, and he wrote all of his poetry with a pencil in his mouth. And he was genuinely, like, the main thesis of it was, let me die, let me die. And I was like, it sounds morbid to say I resonated with that, but it tapped into all the sort of stuff that I want to talk about, you know, mental illness and, you know, frustration against a system that will not let you achieve your goals. So for me, that felt my first turning point, where I was like, this is still in Spanish, but it's more like the sort of thing I want to say on stage.
Definitely.
And so I think you've got to find, first of all, your style,
second of all, your substance. Yeah. Amazing. I want to ask you about your new book for something new, but are you up for me doing something new first?
Yes, of course.
Fantastic. So I've got a new book coming out next year that is poems from the first 100 days of my son's life. And so this one is day 100, so it's sort of coming to the end of that journey. And it is simply called A Blessing. Caro suggests we plant a tree to mark your 100th day. Something we can come back and visit as you both grow. May you lay down enough roots to connect deeply with others. May you be protected long enough to grow and shelter those beneath you. May you have oxygen, water, and light. Chris orders 100 Stroopwafels to turn up at our door. This is more than the entire supermarket has in stock, so 5 boxes are swapped out for larger packets of mini Stroopwafels, meaning we end up with 189 in total. May you be ridiculous and generous and committed to the bit. May you attract others as ridiculous as you. May you find something you love as much as your dad loves Stroopwafels. Helen brings a badge she made at work that says 100 days old. She apologizes if it looks rushed. She had to hide in a cupboard and use the badge machine in the dark when no one was looking. May you learn that something does not have to be flawless to be perfect. May you learn to break the rules when it is worth it. May you find as many excuses as possible to celebrate being alive. Anna comes round for a curry with 3 books to make me cry. We take it in turns to pass you between us so that everyone can eat. Friends message to congratulate you on getting to triple figures. I share some of these poems and can feel there's something there. May you not need to know exactly how we got here. May you not need to know exactly what comes next. But may you know that you are loved. And may you know that we are loved. And may that be as good a place to start as any. Thank you very much. Are you up for sharing something new?
Yes, absolutely. Can you hear me a bit better now? I've got an actual microphone.
That is lovely.
It just got airdropped in by my boyfriend, which is relevant because my something new is love. I write a lot about domestic abuse and what happens when relationships go wrong. So I haven't often had occasion in my work to write about what happens when things go right. And so for this book, it's been a bit of a learning curve for me because I was convinced that nobody would like to listen to poetry about love. I thought that is just, it's not, I don't read poetry about things going right. You know, I thought people would only like me when I'm bleeding on the page. So I sat down, my friends are getting married and wedding gifts are expensive. So I wrote a piece of poetry that I then shared with loads of people. And I said, if you want to use it at your wedding, feel free, because they're expensive things. I didn't realize how expensive weddings are. So I said, you know, you can use this at your wedding. You can use it at a commitment ceremony. You can just give it to your partner as an anniversary gift if you're cheap like me. So this is the vow. I'm beginning to think you are made just for me. I'm in awe of how lucky one person can be to be loved through each compromise, question or qualm, to be sheltered from storm and enshrined in the calm, to be held not like glass but the end of a deal, not to be made to hurt but encouraged to heal, never begged for forgiveness but asked for permission, and in place of excuses be offered contrition, so patient, consistent, constructive and good, seeking not to cause conflict but be understood by the person I know knows me inside and out, who can calm any storm and assuage any doubt, who's not caused, but will wipe every tear on my face. Gives instead of cold shoulders a warm and embrace in each other, we've found it, that thing that we crave. May it burn like desire and break like a wave lapping shores of the oceans I travel to find, just to love you for longer. You loved back in kind. I promise to hold you through sickness and health, rich or poor, I am sure in your arms I've found wealth. I will love you as long as my spirit draws breath, and much longer. This kind of love knows no death. I am yours for as long as you'd like to be mine. If you ask me, I'm certain forever is fine. Thank you.
Thank you. That is absolutely gorgeous. You've got a new book coming out. My first question is, can you tell us the title of your first book and the title of your second book and how you came up with those titles.
Right. So I'll preface this by saying, okay, I didn't think anyone would buy it. Okay. So I was just trying to be funny. I called the first book Poems, which is how I say poems. So I say poems. So I thought, how funny if everybody else is wrong for a change, because nobody says it right. Like, I get raging because people be like, oh, please welcome to the stage, Len Penny, talking about our new collection, Poems. I'm like, no, do it right. Do it properly. Do it again. so it's Poems. First book's called Poems. And then the second book is called Poems in Awe, which means poems as well, because it was like a holding title, because I was like, what am I going to call the second book? And then they were like, oh, I could just call it Poems in Awe. And I was like, that'd be so funny. Imagine if they actually went for that. And then I realised I have a ridiculous amount of power in the publishing relationship that we have. So they were like, you call it whatever you want, gal. And I was like, I want to call it Poems in Awe. So that's, in hindsight, horrific.
Incredible. And I guess within that, there is freedom to have poems about anything because they technically all fit that brief. You talked about love feeling new to write about. Does it feel like this collection has a theme? Does it feel like it is more sprawling?
Look, I don't get paid for themes. I don't get paid for narratives. I don't get paid for structure. If you want that, read a novel. Do you know what I mean? This is just... It's a sketchbook, do you know, and also people have this sick, twisted fascination in our culture. I'm getting on my soapbox now. They want a journey. They want a healing journey. And that, I'm afraid, I will never be able to provide because I'm still mental. Do you know what I mean? I can write as many poems as I want. It's no getting any better. Like, it's irreparably damaged. So I have very carefully chosen it so it's not all of the happy stuff at the end and all of the sad stuff at the start, because that implies that through poetry you can heal. You can't. I'm so sorry. Spoiler alert, poetry is not therapy, but therapy is therapy. And you know, I've put a lot of work in, and the poetry is a great way for me to document that journey, but it's not like a linear thing where I'm cured because I wrote a couple of stanzas. No, I want to document the journey of life that I'm on, not a healing journey. There's no arc. There's no character development. Like, I'm just as mental, because no one wants to read poetry from me when I'm happy. Do you know what I mean? There's also a piece of the book called Bad for Business where I lament about the fact that, like, where's the conflict in not stacking the dishwasher correctly? Like, when Poems was coming out, I was like, going to just like break my heart so I can get this book finished, because it's a hurdle I'm trying to get over. So yeah, and there's no themes. No.
Oh, incredible.
And it's available to order.
Again, I guess I feel like I've almost,
you did,
like,
themes.
Well, for the first time, I've come on the, like, opposite journey in that I only ever...
Should we be doing themes?
That was such a good look. I thought the screen had frozen.
No, sorry.
Because you held it. I was like, okay, there's a glitch. But no, it's just powerful. No, to stand up for myself, I only ever wrote one poem at a time, and it was just about, like, whatever was... That's surely fine.
If it works for you. Different strokes for different folks. I don't read poetry. I don't like poetry, so maybe I'm not, like...
I got involved in poetry through these poetry slams where you just had 3 minutes to do one thing. And so I'd write the next poem about the next thing. And then at some point, I decided to do like an hour-long show up in Edinburgh. And that was suddenly me thinking, how do these link together? And the main link that my first book had was I wrote them all. And so it was like, I wrote this one, then I wrote this one, then I wrote this one. like second bit was a bit mathsy, but it was only once I had them all that in hindsight I would sort of try and shoehorn some kind of, you know, retcon narrative about.
That's a lie.
I think.
Where's the intellectual honesty in saying I'm the link between my poems.
But I think it was only once I had enough poems that I could see the sort of connections between them. But anyway, it was always sort of sporadic and an afterthought. But then in this book, it is so clearly like 100 poems from the like first 100 days of my son's life. So they're all about the same thing. And in one sense, that felt very freeing because not every poem had to do everything. But again, there was that sense of this doesn't follow a kind of clean emotional arc because actually first 3 days are like the best days of my life and then the next day is the worst day of my life and then I'm fine. And I remember, again, like having an editor for the first time sort of commenting on it and saying, like, are you sure you want to do it in that order? Do you not want to kind of group them in a way that makes sense? And thinking, actually, it feels most honest to that experience to write about it as it's happening, because for me, this is my job. But I wrote something every. I wrote like enough down in my phone to like pinpoint the memory, so that then later I could come back once I'd had a bit more sleep and write an actual poem. So like a lot of these first hundreds, quote unquote, poems were just me being like, "It's so weird that Emma Thompson was a baby once," you know, or like something as sort of unhinged as that. And so it was only later that I felt like I could give it something that felt more meaningful.
How did you like having an editor?
I was terrified of it because I know what I want to say and how I want to say it. And in particular, because these poems felt so personal, I was saying, here's like a heartfelt thing I've written about my son being a week old. What if someone tells me it's rubbish and I can't use it? And so I was very hesitant, but I enjoyed it because they liked my poems. So, but again, every time there was like a deadline to send stuff in, I was holding my breath that they would be like, you know what, actually, we're over it now. Like, you've gone on about him a bit too much. And so it was always after. Yeah.
That's wild.
They didn't.
I'd have started swinging if they said they were.
No, they didn't say that. That was what I was afraid they would say.
Oh, I thought they said that.
No, no, no. That would be that. So bold.
That would be so huge. Do you want me to fight them? I was like, do you want me to go back? And I went to...
No, but that's what I like had in my head. I was like, but in part because I was so close to it, I think I found it helpful to have someone who had like slightly more detached view from it, who was saying like, what if this poem went there? And every time I would have a like visceral reaction of like, no, you can't possibly change that. And then like a couple of days later, once I calmed down, be like, you know what, that actually makes quite a lot of sense. So I
don't calm down. They're like, what if it went there? I'm like, well, you write it then. Like, it didn't. Sorry. I'm uneditable. They're so mad at me all the time because I'm like, no. Sorry.
So, behind the scenes content, I think we might have the same editor. And I think maybe the reason why they've been so like lenient with me is because you paved the way.
They had to run the gamut of me. Because the first time I got my edits through, I cried and went, this is insane. And then they were like, you know, you can say no. And I was like, all right, then no. Like, no.
I need to thank you for doing that hard work for me. Because I, yeah, by the time they came to me, it was very much like, is some thoughts, but
because they're used to the actual pipe bombs in me.
That is incredible, and I thank you for it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I don't think we should be I think this is diagnosable within me. I don't think we should be.
Absolutely amazing. I want to do something borrowed in a minute, but I wanted to ask you quickly, in terms of talking about structure, in your book, you said something that I really resonated with or really liked that I don't want to misquote, but it was about the structure of rhyme feeling like it can either be a cage for things or it can be a very freeing thing. Would you be able to say it properly? Because I've got it wrong.
It feels like a hug for the things I like and a prison for the things I don't. I mean, I write with rhyme, I write with structure, and I like that, and that works for me. If you hit me with write a free verse thing, I will cry and not do it. At uni, I had to do that. They wanted us to write, first of all, in Spanish again. It was like rude, but it was like, it has to be kind of like avant-garde. And I was like, that's too avant-garde, gal. So I wrote it and I got such a shit grade. And this is before, this is like contemporary to my like first foray into poetry. So I was convinced that like this academic had told me my work was shit. And I was like, it's like juvenile and awful. And I was like, this is so bad. No one's ever going to like my stuff. Realized it's just because of the Spanish thing. Do you know what I mean? So I just hit that in the head, finished that degree and then, you know, left it in the dust. But for me, the structure is integral to how it works because it's how I do it. It has to rhyme. It has to rhyme in my accent, first of all. It has to, you know, it has to fit that structure. Otherwise, it just feels like it's not a poem to me. And I didn't realise that was unpopular until I was engaging a lot more with modern poetry. And there's not as much rhyme as you'd think. It's like a poignant thought. With the rhyme for me is just, I want to make it rhyme. I can't do it free verse. I envy people who can do it free verse because I need that control. I'm a massive control freak.
Yeah.
So if someone performs it and they don't make it rhyme because their accent changes it, I'm like, to the accent.
That leads me onto my Something Borrowed because my main introduction to Scots was through my sister-in-law, who is Scottish, who bought me the Gruffalo in Scots. And so most of my sort of key Scots vocabulary is about sort of mouses and woods and foxes and going on.
That's all you need.
And I loved it so much, but I wasn't confident that I could do the accent. So what I have gone for is I've got a completely different poem by Carol Ann Duffy. It is genuinely one of my son's favourites. I think partly because I get so excited to read it and because Julia Donaldson knows how to rhyme. But this, I'm kind of keeping on the love theme. This poem is called Valentine and it goes like this. Not a red rose or a satin heart. I give you an onion. It is a moon wrapped in brown paper. It promises light, like the careful undressing of love. Here, it will blind you with tears like a lover. It will make your reflection a wobbling photo of grief. I'm trying to be truthful, not a cue card or a kissogram. I give you an onion. Its fierce kiss will stay on your lips, possessive and faithful as we are, for as long as we are. Take it. Its platinum loops shrink to a wedding ring. If you like, lethal. Its scent will cling to your fingers, cling to your knife. So I partly wanted to share that because that also felt like a proper sort of poetry applause. Exactly. But at school, I read some like Carol Ann Duffy, but it wasn't until I saw her perform, and the context for her performance was it was at the like Emirates Literature Festival in the like Dubai Opera House, and like the Sheikh was coming along specifically, and so we just had to wait till he arrived with his sort of posse, and he wanted to see like Carol Ann Duffy, and so she was like waiting backstage to go on stage in this like publicly homophobic country and government, and she chose to read a poem about Tiresias going into the forest and coming out and changing gender, and her hand was shaking, but she kind of nailed it. And to sort of speak that level of truth to power when you're in that position to be able to. And then I saw her out of the back afterwards, and she was smoking the fattest cigar I have ever seen. And I was like, oh my God, you are a rock star. I am now completely in love with you. But again, it was that interesting thing of having seen you and having an association with you, there is now a new lens through which I kind of go back and appreciate the poetry even more. Would you be up for doing something borrowed?
Yeah, I remember reading that poetry in school, and I had to do an essay on it in my higher English, and I remember detesting. And the thing is, it's not even that it's a bad poem, it's that I'm intolerant to onions. So there's quite a visceral, like, I can't believe this is the central concern, and I have to sit and analyse something that makes me so violently ill. So yeah, that's my connection to that piece. I have chosen my something borrowed is plagiarism, because I have ripped Robert Burns off, which I think is allowed for two reasons. One, he was a misogynist, and two, he's dead, so you can't defame the dead. I checked. I always sort of introduced this piece by using a kind of really highbrow literary reference, and I don't want to alienate the audience, so I'm just going to check that everyone's kind of aware of the seminal literary classic Super Mario Brothers. Cool. So you know how you've got Mario and Wario? So Mario's like the good guy, and Wario's like his evil counterpart, denoted by the M on his head and the W on his head. So I feel very much like the Wario of Robert Burns, because he sits in my cultural consciousness, and the more I learn about him, the less I like about him. But I just can't escape the way that he was so good at rhyming, and I hate that. So I took his piece To a Mouse, which is famously thought of as like one of the best examples of, you know, connecting with nature and making it all about us humans. And I decided to take that instead of a mouse. I want to speak to the child, to the impoverished child, because, you know, I don't really like mice. But I like children. So I plagiarize it. This is on ruining their future, on ruining our future with their legislation. And it's a direction specifically to the current government in both of our countries. We precious coor in timorous wane. Oh, what a panic's in thy brain. Thou needna cast a thought on where the help is gone. They'd sooner gie a lecture than reach out a horn. I'm truly sorry, politicians, wi' ilka cruel unkind admissions gien sick a fricht, and cast you out into the murksome cold cruel nicht. I doot not where you're meant to bide, while them that shirks their duty hide ahint the rules, squeeze ilka penny fae the hospitals and schools. Your wee bit hussy, yours by richt lies ilka day out wi' your sicht, while kings they nocht but sanction and be knight wi' swords. How many wains could shelter in non hussy lords? Their main concern, to get elected by squinty mates, if I protect it, fecht again each mortal sin to rule again. Forsake they yins they're there to serve, be old to wane. Thou art trapped, wee couthy wane, athin a system cruel and vain, so for it we'll can cast our een to gie a horn. And for they wains that need it maist, we aye mon stone. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. We're coming to the end of the hour. I would happily talk to you all day. Before we do something blue, my main question is, when is your book out and how can people get it? And where are you going on tour reluctantly because you don't like performing?
See, that's the thing. I go out once a year and it's for a book tour. And I do all of the things. So it's called Poems and Awe. It is available to pre-order now. I usually say from the link in my bio because it's my video. So that's like sleeper cell in my head. I'm like, available to order now from the link in my bio. But it's available to order now from the Portobello Bookshop if you want signed copies. And it's out on the 25th of September. And I'm going to Bath. I'm going to Newcastle. I'm going to Bristol. I'm doing Scotland a lot, but, you know, obviously. I'm doing Wales. I'm doing Crickhowell in Wales. Yeah, I'm going all over. Stockport sold out, actually. So, but there's also a live stream date. So if you want to tune in from home and you don't want to leave the house because you're antisocial like me, you can get a live stream on the 24th where I'll be performing and you can watch me from home.
Incredible. Thank you so much. I'm going to do my Something Blue and then hand over to you to finish. And I changed my mind beforehand, so it's on my phone. But this one, again, is from the 100 Days. And I guess speaking to the idea that it was rapidly changing sort of from the massive highs to the massive lows. Part of the reason I wrote the book was before my son was born, I asked people for any advice that they had, sort of mainly think of just like practical hacks of like how you secretly get loads of sleep and have a nice time. But the one thing that I genuinely found helpful was someone saying that, like, no 2 days are the same. So just because you have a good day doesn't mean that the next day is going to be good. And likewise, just because you have an awful day, that doesn't mean. And I think that applies sort of beyond sort of parenting and childhood. So I've tried to learn to cope with that as well. So this is from day 62, and it's simply called No 2 Days Are the Same. When it feels like we are drowning, it's a life raft. Tomorrow is a chance to start again. Maybe the mood or the moon or the weather will be different. We'll help each other through with this refrain. Except today you had a lie-in and all morning you were chill. And you gurgled and we giggled and you gurgled further still. And you pooed in an ice cream tub and have never looked more pleased. And when we got you out the bath, you did not scream. And I know that all of this will change tomorrow. Part of the magic is none of it's guaranteed. But for all the different days we have ahead of us, I wouldn't mind a couple more of these. Thanks. Thank you so, so much. I have performed about sort of 7 times over the weekend, and this is like my last one, and this is my last official duty to sort of hand over to Len to finish. So this is going to be the thing I enjoy most because I'm not thinking in my head of what I have to do next. So it gives me great pleasure to please welcome back Len Penny for Something Blue.
So I have taken blue to mean incredibly depressed, and this is the only piece that I've written recently where I was actually sobbing. It was 3 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't get this idea out of my head about, you know, Laika, the Russian space dog. They sent her up and they knew she wasn't going to come home. And she didn't know. She thought she was just having a great time till she died. So I woke up and my partner is like, he woke up and I was sobbing and he was like, what's wrong? Are you okay? Like, what's happened? Thinking that someone's died or something. I went, it's a dog in the space. It's a dog and it's a Russian space. So yeah, that's how I was told very specifically, I'm not to consume any content to do with Russian space programs past the hours of 9 p.m. This is called Good Girl and it's blue, both in terms of the tone and also the earth that Laika is looking down on. And I'm sorry if I cry. I'm so happy I've made some new friends of my own. I no longer am forced to face this world alone. The world's just a ball that I haven't yet caught. So I'll sit and I'll wait, like my science friends taught me to sit, like a good girl, obedient friend. And I know that it will all work out in the end. It's so warm here, so hot, in my metal cocoon. I hope that I might be brought back to Earth soon. I know I've just met them, but I think they're fun. I hope they'll be proud of the work that I've done when I come back to Earth soon. I hope that they might be impressed by how well I sat still for my flight. It's an awfully long time to be flying straight up. It was one giant task for one very small pup. I am small, but I'm capable. Happy to try to be helpful. One friend in a vast empty sky. I'm not lonely, not sad. and not scared anymore. There is so much of space that I'll try to explore. I trust in my friends. They're so clever and kind. I hope that they have my best interests in mind. I believe in my heart that at heart they are good. It's been quite a while now, so I think that they should start to bring me back down now. I'd quite like to keep my eyes open to stargaze, but I need to sleep. Into sweet dreams of safety, I'll peacefully sink. It is getting so warm here. I'll drift off and think of the last words I heard my new science friend say. Good girl, Laika. Sit, Laika. Now, Laika. Stay. Thank you. Sorry for ruining the vibes.
Thing. It is honestly on me for structuring this way. This happens so often that I'm like, and now, end on a high, let's all have a nice cry together. But I love to cry. I love to watch other people cry. So thank you for enabling two of my favourite hobbies.
We love making people cry.
Thank you so much. Can we give it up one more time for the fantastic Lem Hanger?
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.